Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph P. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org. It's the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. It means the universe that we can't see. So there's a lot more that we can't see than we can. So it's all there, all around us, and we just can't see it. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. As a public service presentation, we'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Hi, Joseph. Thank you for that great introduction, and it's nice to be with you all. This is my way of giving back. I owe my life to the 12-step programs and the principles that they teach and the fellowship that they provide and the sponsorship. I would be in a lot of hot water without the sponsors that I've had. And so this website, rumradio.org, is Joseph's effort to give back and promote the idea that one alcoholic working in another succeeds, working with another succeeds when other things fail miserably. So that is true in my case and everyone that I know who has long-term recovery is that they've worked with other people. We only get to keep what we give away. So this is Joseph giving back, me giving back, and I hope that you hear something tonight that is really transformative, that changes your life and really helps your recovery and builds your family. I'm dedicated to helping families. And part of what is going on here is that the 12-step programs are my new chosen family. My parents have passed away. My brothers are still ripping and running, for all I know. My oldest brother is 70, lives in a different state, and I just received from my kids a mugshot of a few weeks ago of my oldest brother getting arrested and apprehended for some crime of some kind, and it just goes to show it takes some people a long time to wake up. So my chosen family is the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. Celebrate Recovery is a 12-step meeting that I attend, and that is my chosen family. There are people with whom I can reason, people who have some integrity, and they live, they do what they say, and they say what they do, and they live one life. For a long, long time, I lived a double life, or tried to. One person by night, a different person by day, thinking that I'm getting away with a lot of things, and the cost was phenomenally high. One of the costs was that I didn't take advantage of any mentors, any teachers, any tutors along the way to teach me the ropes and how to do things. And also I didn't bring people of value around, and my kids didn't get to meet anyone of real substance. I mean, drug dealers are usually lacking in character and substance. So I've been apologizing. I've been writing letters of apology, and I've been living amends for my kids. I have four kids that are grown now, nine grandchildren, and things are a bit different for the grandchildren than they were for my kids. I'm not even sure my kids fully appreciate what they missed because of my drinking and drugging. But I feel awful about it, and so I want to live a life that has some integrity, that takes advantage of the great minds in the world and the great people in our community that are living examples of teamwork and love and giving and devotion to God. That's another thing I've gotten from my recovery. It's a spiritual program. Step 11 is my favorite step, which states sought to improve our conscious contact with God through meditation and prayer, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us, and the power to carry that out, which I call Holy Spirit now. So it's amazing that people, millions of people, get together every day, every week, every month to increase their conscious contact with God. I mean, that is an amazing thought. So that's where we are now, and that's my family. My chosen family is being one of God's children and following God, doing. Someone famous said, they will know you're my disciple because you do what I say. That's pretty simple. That escaped me for a long time, but now that's my chosen family. God is my father, and and I want to mention that Joseph puts this all together at his own expense. He doesn't make a nickel from this website or the radio programs, and I really appreciate that. It's his giving of love, and so and he spent a bundle on improving the website. So go to rumradio.org. Follow along with us. We're going to be reading from the drop-down called Captain's Table. And Joseph, do you want to begin the program?
Sure, Harold. Thank you. I want to give a call-in number. If there's any brave souls out there that would like to join in on the conversation, you'd be more than welcome. As much as I'm enamored with my own voice and Harold, sometimes someone else come in there to give us a different perspective. I can understand most people are a little reluctant to call in. The idea of the microphone and a larger audience is intimidating to some. I would tell you this, speaking in public is the number one fear. You can Google it. It's more than the death of the body, the death of the child, loss of home, job, life. And at first blush, it doesn't look like very much, just talking, until you realize that ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. And of course, you know what pride is? Pride is the disavowment of God or the need thereof. Natural man has been an enemy to God and has been so since the fall. Thus, the pride will always go before the fall. So don't let be prideful. We're all in this boat together. If you'd like to call in, we'd love to talk to you. I'm sure there's something that you could teach me, and I'd be glad to really love to hear from you.
There are no dumb questions.
That's right. There's only, actually, I think questions are more important than answers. Because for every correct answer, there's always another question. The guest call-in is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. If you're not inclined, that's okay too, and you're more than welcome just to listen. But it would be really nice if you wanted to come in, chime in, and chat with us. Tonight we're going to be doing, see how far we're going to get. I have three from the captain's table, the smaller post, Decision Making for Dummies, The Grape, A Crushing Romance, and A Fast Break Upon Awakening. Usually I like to start the program with the third step prayer. This is not AA. This is an NA or CA or any of the A's. It's closer to Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. This is Rum Radio. So the things we espouse here, I take most of the information from program literature. Because the big book, for instance, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the original 12 steps therein is the template for all the other 12-step programs. Now, there's variations, of course, but the original, and I always believe if we're going to do something, let's go to the source. Anytime you duplicate something, it's always going to be a little different and not quite as crisp, my experience. So on page 63 of the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a thing called the third-step prayer. And I use this with my new sponsees. Once I've gotten them to, I ask them a new person when I'm looking for them. The big book on page 89 says, go find a prospect and start working on them. It's real explicit. It doesn't say have the prospect find you. It says go find the prospect and start working on him. So I take that as a direction. I go find my prospect. Now, I have some sponsees that ask me, and I treat them the same. But if I'm looking for a sponsor, I don't wait for them to find me if I'm ready to take on a sponsee. I go find them and start working on them. That's what it says. And the first thing I'll ask them is, have you had enough? Usually right after they get their beginner's chip or desire chip, it's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. That means no drinking and drugging for 24 hours. That's it. Not the rest of your life, not until next week, for 24 hours. And if they've agreed to that, they've gotten up, they've made a decision, if they say their name, which acknowledges the fact that they're acknowledging the problem, there's a problem. They acknowledge to their innermost self that there is a problem. And that's tough sometimes. And if they've done that, I ask them, have you had enough? Enough pain, enough depression, enough sorrow, enough humiliation. Have you had enough? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. They're not just telling me. They're also telling themselves. They can hear themselves talk. They're confirming the information I need to hear if I'm going to put myself out in the effort. And then I tell them they can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit. But there's certain things they have to do. They have certain actions are required by them. And the first thing, I give them Clancy's 7 questions. It's found on the Rum Radio site under how to find a sponsee. It's in Word, so you can print it right out. Carry it with you if you're looking for a sponsee. My experience is luck is nothing more when preparation meets opportunity. You're prepared. The student will appear when the teacher is ready and prepared. And I hand them Clancy's 7 questions, a little mini fourth step. Not to replace anything, it just gets started. The important thing is not how they answer the questions. The important thing is that they've taken simple instruction. I need these questions answered, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my phone number. I expect your call. We're done. It's until I hear back from this fellow. If I don't hear back from him, that's okay. Two things, he's either not ready or he's not ready for me. In any case, that's okay, and he'll figure it out if the pain gets bad enough. If I do get him back and he's done the work that I've suggested, we get started, and one of the first assignments is to get a home group. It's a place where you go on a regular basis. People get to know you and you get to know them. It's a lifeline group. And to get the name of maybe 20 men in your group if possible. phone numbers. Have the chairperson send out a list, or a newcomer's packet is always nice. Some clubs do it, some groups do it, some don't. But if not, go a little early to your next meeting and have the chairperson send out a list of just a piece of paper, and have the anybody who is willing to give your name, their name and number, and willing to take calls. That's sufficient. And for the next 30 days, I want you to call one of the men on the list, men with men and girls with girls. We find this to work better when possible. But the bottom line is you work the steps. If it doesn't work out that way, if you can't find the sponsor of the same gender, it's okay until you do. You make every effort to accomplish that, because we don't want to get involved in inappropriate relationships, or it's a very intimate relationship and it can be easily misconstrued. So we try to stay to program principles that way. So you call one of the men on the list, and you ask them permission to say the 3rd step prayer to them, also a surrender prayer. And the reason I have him do that is getting used to pick up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. A lot of us did like to do that, because I can handle this myself. No, I couldn't, but this is a good way to get started. It also connects him up with that group. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. The 3rd step prayer also encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever flavor of addiction you might have. And fourthly, the person who you're calling might have been considering taking that first drink of alcohol, and chances are he will not if you call them. No guarantees, but it's a good way to get your sponsee into action immediately. And we find that the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. But you can't give away something you don't have. That's why the steps are really important, and they're important to do quickly, timely. Now, we don't want to sacrifice too much of thorough for timely, but timely is essential. The clock is ticking. People are dying. People are confused, so a sponsor takes the wheel and say, okay, guys, this is the way through the woods. Let's get started. And this is the 3rd step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Thanks, Joseph. Thank
you. You're welcome. Okay, so let's get into the topic for tonight. We have 3. We're going to try to get all 3. If we can, fine. If we can't, we can finish it up on another evening. On another post. But right now we're going to do decision making for dummies. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Robert Frost. Decisions, decisions. We come into recovery with broken pickers. I got a great story I got to tell you about sometime about that. Broken pickers mean we've made a lot of bad decisions, and we've put ourselves in positions to be harmed. So part of the recovery process is starting to learn how to make reasonable, rational decision. We take an effort to make a good decision. Now, there's no guarantee that the decision will work out to our benefit or as we like. But there's certain things we can do to try to ensure that possibility. Now, we take an action. This is all about taking an action. You know, they say the 3rd step is we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Now, of course, a decision, there's 3 frogs on the log. And one of them makes the decision to jump. How many frogs are left on the log?
Three.
He only made the decision. He took no action. And this is part of the decision-making process. So I came up with this. It's called decision-making for dummies. We've made decisions to take the hard back roads that have not served us well. Our decision-making is suspect at best. A sponsor is the obvious choice to seek guidance and direction. Sponsors are asked to all sorts of things. Should I stay married? Get married. Buy a house. Change jobs. Get a job. Yes, get a job. I always say yes to that question. Yes, get a job. In some rare circumstances, if the fellow's not working and he has enough resources that we could put that much more effort into his recovery, it might not be wise for him to get a job right now. But in some people don't have that opportunity, and a job will keep them out of trouble, but that has to be done on sponsee-by-sponsee basis. I don't really tell them yes or no. On and on, all the questions about life, you know, will start coming at a sponsor. The basic suggestion is to change is to change playmates, not do change playmates. And what we do is you suggest to a sponsor to change playmates and playgrounds. The fellows that his posse, the group that he was with, drinking or drugging or both, had not served him well. These people know him at a certain level. These people drink and drug with him. They expect that behavior to continue. The playground of the bars, the playgrounds, the places where he would habitat to find his drugs, get his alcohol, and hang out. So the one suggestion I'd make as a sponsor is to change his playmates and his playgrounds. Try a different, cleaner environment. But you got to remember now, I can only make suggestions as a sponsor. I looked up the word suggestion. It means a subtle command. I liken it to if you're jumping out of an airplane and recorded your hand and your sponsor's with you and your sponsor suggests that you pull the ripcord. You don't have to pull that ripcord, but we find it very advantageous to do that. Not to make any drastic.
It's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stop at the bottom.
That's right. But not to make any drastic or sudden life-changing alterations in your first year of sobriety while avoiding any entanglements, romantic entanglements as well. Now, I don't know if any of this makes sense to anybody. Sometimes it doesn't. We're not marriage counselors. We don't tell them whether they should have a playmates or not. But the reason why we suggest keeping a low profile when it comes to relationships is that after a year of working the steps and of sobriety, the person they are now will not be the same person they will be in a year from now. So if you start a relationship with that short term of recovery, my experience is most of those relationships do not work out well. There's even a term for it, 13 stepping. That's people with very short term sobriety, and sometimes two short term piece sobriety come together and have a romantic relationship. We don't tell them not to, but the thing is, we can tell them what our experience is with those kinds of relationships. My experience is they usually do not work out well. So that's a suggestion I would give to a sponsee. If you said, hey, I met Susie Q and, you know, we're really in love and we want to get together like that, what would you do? I says, I don't know. What, you know, I says, I really don't know. I am not you. Well, if you were me, well, what would you do? I'm not you. I can't tell you what to do. I can tell you what my experience is on the subject, and then you have to make that decision on your own. You're best served by keeping the focus on working the 12 steps, staying sober, and extending the hand of AA to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's our experience. rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There are those who will not or cannot follow this simple program. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. They're not at fault. There's those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. They, too, can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. And that means to be honest with your sponsor. Sometimes it's hard. When someone comes in, we've lied so long and so hard that the truth would have served us better. So don't expect a lot of honesty coming out of your new sponsees. They're not there yet. What you can do is to give them your experience, strength, and hope. And the experience is really important. What you believe the consequences might be to a certain behavior. But other than that, it's always up to the sponsee to make the decisions. I said this in a meeting with Tom. I would like to renegotiate the terms, life on life's terms. Not on life's terms. Sorry, it's not negotiable. Life sometimes just come at you. It's not about being fair. It's not about being just. It's just life. When I realize that life is hard, it gets easier. Decisions still have to be made, though. Just because we get sober, gravity did not go away. Life sometimes requires hard choices and consequential decisions. Agency, I call it agency or free will, is the cornerstone of recovery. Sponsors only make suggestions based on experience, strength, and hope. When a sponsee asks me for my opinion on a life-changing decision, I direct them to a decision-making tool. I remind them, this is their life, and a big part of recovery is becoming responsible for their decisions and their consequences. For every decision, there's a particular consequence. Would you agree, Harold?
Yes, everything's a trade-off, and I think most important for most of the people that I've worked with, the most difficult thing was also the most important thing, and that's to change their entire circle of friends. I can't even count the number of people that have tried to get themselves on the right track. They've done a pretty good job of it, but when they decide to hang around old friends, it's like, I don't know if you've ever been crabbing. Anybody in the audience, have you ever been set out the crab cages, and you put a fish head in the bottom of a wire cage. The crabs crawl in. There's no top on it, and the crew comes around cage by cage and grabs the line and quickly pulls it up into the boat, and as it's coming up, the crabs are trying to crawl out. The crabs in the bottom always reach up and try to pull the ones that are on the walls back down into the bottom. That just is a phenomenon that you find when you're catching crabs. And often I've felt recovery is the same way. Folks that are trying to climb out of the trap are pulled down by those that are in the bottom of the trap. And so it's so important to change our circle of friends, and it helped me a lot, and we use the word friends so loosely. I mean, a friend is someone who will stand in court next to you in front of the judge. That's a friend. None of my drug dealer friends, so-called friends, did that for me. A friend is someone who will help you change the oil on the car, help you pay your rent, those types of things. No, that's not anything that I saw in the circle of the drug world. So we've got to redefine friends, and we've got to realize that, and the toughest part of this is changing our circle of friends and acquaintances, even when it involves family. There are family members that are not healthy to be around. It's not good for our recovery. It's a hindrance, and we've got to stop being around family members who want to pull us down. it's almost as if they're saying, how dare you get happy? How dare you be successful? How dare you get away from drugs? How dare you? And I didn't need that in my early recovery. It was a rough time. Smells are very difficult. Were for me, that's my experience in early recovery. I had to stay away from the smells, stay away from bars. I had to stay away from the smell of marijuana. I had to stay away from the old crowd, and it worked. It worked. I put myself in a new environment. As I worked the steps, I got to steps 8 and 9, where we make a list of the people we've harmed, and we are become willing to make direct amends to them, and we go out and make amends. My sponsor said, hey, remember, put yourself on that list. You've harmed yourself in many ways. So I did that, and one of the amends was for me to finally go back to college, finish, and get my degree. And so that really taught me a lot. It helped me change my circle of friends, and it showed me what real teamwork is about. That's what college did for me. It showed me real teamwork, real friendship, brainstorming, how to put your heads together with other people that are focused and logical. Stop living by feelings. That was a big part of my recovery. So we're really on the right track here when we talk about decision-making and no longer living by feelings, but instead make some logical decisions for a change. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. You know, you mentioned about going to the bar. That reminds me of a story. There was this string that went to the bar. And he went to the bartender and says, I'd like a beer. And the bartender says, I'm sorry, we don't serve strings in here. So the string went to the back, and he put himself in a loop and messed up his hair and then came back to the bar and said, I'd like a beer, please. He said, aren't you a string? And he said, no, I'm afraid not.
Okay.
All right. Okay, now we're going to do prayer, meditation, and Benjamin Franklin. This is the answer to what I tell my sponsees when they need to make a decision. Now, I've given them my experience on what I believe the consequence of that decision might be, but I always remind them that whatever they do, whether they want to drink or not drink, stay in the program, work the steps or anything, it's always their decision how to do that. Now, of course, if they don't want to do anything, then you don't put a lot of energy into them. I'll tell my sponsees, I'll put as much into their recovery as they are. No more, no less. So if they want it, I'm right with them. I'll go right to the wall with them. Well, maybe not to the wall. I'll go to Starbucks for sure. But I'm with them if they want it. I'm there. If they're not interested or they're starting to flake away or they don't want to do, but I'm still their sponsor, it's okay. I just put my energy into someone else who's more interested. And usually, if you get them through in a timely manner, they don't languish. I think that's the important idea. Well, I tell them, okay,
let me jump in and say that for folks who have strong recovery, they have strong recovery skills, they've got recovery tools, they've got the ability to put all this into words, there's a temptation to work harder at this than your sponsee does. And let me warn against that. A lot of you out there are really skilled, your recovery strong. You feel like you can carry someone, don't do it. Do not put more energy into a person's recovery than they're putting in. I know you can do that, and you can maintain that for some length of time, but don't. It only weakens the other person. don't work on someone's recovery harder than they do. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. On the Rum Radio website, there's a section on sponsorship, and one of the questions it answers, how do I know if I'm carrying my sponsee? It's a good little post, cute little pictures on there, and that kind of lays it out what that would look like. So I would suggest take a look at that if you have any question. The website is pretty comprehensive when it comes to answering sponsee questions. That's probably why it's so unique. We don't really get a lot of that. The big book doesn't have the word sponsor in there. Chapter 7 gives us an idea how to work with a newcomer, but that's even limited to a bit. The key with the big book and sponsorship is if your sponsor was good enough to know how to develop written material and which parts of the big book work for that. If you didn't have a sponsor who had that information, it was basically shooting from the hip. So when it's your turn to sponsor, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot from the hip because that's the way you were sponsored. So look at Rum Radio as a resource, a toolbox, understandings. Take what you need and leave the rest. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I would suggest take a look. So I tell my sponsors, okay, you got a life-changing decision to make or any decision to make. Take a sheet of paper and draw a line down the center. I call this section Prayer, Meditation, and Benjamin Franklin. We start off with the Benjamin Franklin. It was called a laundry list. You draw a line down the center of the paper. On one side, all the pros, all the positive aspects of that decision that you can discern. On the other side, all the cons or the negative aspects that you conceive of this decision, possible negative consequences of this decision. This gives you an opportunity to weigh in your mind, to confront on paper all the possible benefits and all the possible consequences, then sleep on it. Having pondered, weighed, and measured, make your decision. Yes or no. Now, Benjamin Franklin said it would just be a preponderance. The greater the number you would go with what that is, I think it's only good to just weigh it all out and then come to a decision with that information. Now, once you've made your decision, now pray about it. Pray and meditate if that decision is the correct decision. If the yes was the correct decision or if the no is the correct decision, you ask now, you ask God, you ask your higher power, was that the right decision? And this is my experience. If you have clarity of thought and a positive demeanor, it is an affirmation that your decision is correct. If you have stupor of thought and an unease or negative feeling, that is also a confirmation, and then don't look back. As we don't buy into the outcome, we have done all that we can do, and we leave the outcome to God. Harold?
Absolutely. And I've added another element, which is to, on a daily basis, really dig into the scriptures and read the Bible. That's my spiritual program right now. And I'm reading the Bible. I'm understanding how God thinks about things. And that really helps with this. I combine that with this process. In fact, I've used a quadrant system. Where and this might not make sense to some people, but it sheds some subtle light on things. Instead of just a line down the middle, we put a line across the center also, so you have four boxes. In the top box on the left, you write the advantages of doing it, and then on the top box on the right, you write the disadvantages of doing it. On the lower left box, you write down the disadvantages of not doing it, and the box on the lower right are the disadvantages of doing it. So that you come at it from a negative perspective and a positive perspective, and then reverse that, and it brings forth a few more subtleties on making the decision. Then you sleep on it. And but all of that is done after some thorough Bible study, which I do, Bible study, prayer, and meditation on a daily basis. And so that all fits together, and it really is an interesting process. I also did one other thing in my decision-making. My first sponsor gave me a very serious suggestion, one like I suggest pulling the ripcord on your parachute, which was make no decision alone. Make no decision alone. My best thinking had gotten me into the predicament that brought me into the 12-step program. My best thinking had gotten me there, and so I needed a new way of looking at things, and he suggested make no decision alone. Pick up the phone, check in with him all the time. I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about that, and then he would share his experience, strength, and hope. That really made a huge difference in my life. Make no decision alone. For quite a number of months, I tried to sponsor myself. Not a good idea. Like I said before, my best thinking had gotten me where I was. I needed a different perspective. In fact, my decision-making process included realizing that the group itself was a higher power. For those of you who may not want to trust God or understand, they misunderstand God, God doesn't have to be your higher power as you begin this. If you have a chip on your shoulder for God, you can choose a different higher power as you begin the 12 steps. And for me, that was the group itself. That was a power greater than myself. I had tried my first wife as higher power. I don't recommend that. But the two heads are better than one, so I would check in with the group as I made decisions, large and small, and it formed a new habit pattern, and it really, really helped my recovery and helped my relapse prevention plan. Make no decision alone, change my entire circle of friends. Those are the things that really got me off to a great start in my recovery. And that was December 28th, 1987. So I am grateful to God for over 8,000 days. Every one of those days is a gift from God, as I've come to understand it. That's all from me on this one, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Now, of course, if you're not a Christian and the Bible is an abstract concept to you, if you're there's the Quran for the Muslim and there's the Torah for the Jew, the Gita for the Hindu, the list goes on and on, whatever your favorite flavor of religion. It's always good to check in with that if you're an atheist or an agnostic. Maybe if your sponsor's that way too. Even I believe prayer and meditation even goes in with the atheist and the agnostic. You know, the atheist says there is no God and lives like there is one. The agnostic says there might be a God and lives like there isn't. But there's always a way to check with a sponsor or a circle, even the group, to come up with a way of decision. Now you have a couple ideas. I think I'm going to have Harold write that up, and we'll add that to the website on decision making for dummies. So there'll be another aspect to that. You take what you need and leave the rest. I believe simpler is better, but you know, whatever you think is going to work for you, these are tools. Who has enough tools? The next section is The Grape, A Crushing Romance. And this is from the big book where it goes, ever since man first crushed grapes. I believe the first incidence of alcohol production was in Egypt, and they made beer. They just threw barley. They figured it out how to make beer out of barley back in the Egyptians did it early on in the old kingdom. And the builders of the pyramids, part of their pay was a daily beer ration. So you can see this problem with alcohol has been around for a very long time. I think the Greeks and the Romans had Dionysus, and Bacchus was the demigod of pleasure and of wine. So this has been a problem that's plagued mankind for a very long time. I came across this. This is in the Bible. This is in the King James Version of the Bible. And this is interesting. This is an alcoholic. This guy who wrote this, you could see when you hear this, was alcoholic. And he's telling his son the problems with his alcoholism, trying to warn his son. It was a, teach your children well, their father's hell. This is Proverbs, the 23rd Proverb. Just like the 23rd Psalm is probably the most popular psalm in Christendom. It's recorded at all funerals. That was David, Proverbs, or Solomon. Now, there's no guarantee who wrote this. Some of the wise men wrote it. Whoever wrote it was an alcoholic. And it starts at the 29th verse. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? You know what that is, Harold?
There you go. It's a hangover.
Hey, it sounds like one of my hangovers. Yes, it is. He's talking about his hangover. Next verse. They that tarry long to wine. They that go to seek mixed wine. Well, tarry long at the wine, long time, last call for alcohol. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Don't none of that watered down wine you give to the tourists. I want the real thing. The mixed wine.
Well, they didn't have water that was that pure back then, so they would mix wine with it from 3 parts water to 1 part wine up to 8 parts water to 1 part wine as a way of killing the germs in the water. And so most of the wine that's talked about is watered down, most of it like 6 to 1. And then the other stuff, the straight stuff, they called strong drink, and they felt like only barbarians drink strong drink.
Thank you. Yeah, so it was a way of killing the bacteria in the water, a small amount. Clean water was hard to come by. This was an assurance of killing they didn't know about bacteria, they didn't know about germs, but they knew if they put a little wine in the water, they didn't get sick. If they drank the water without it, they got sick. So that's how they figured that. That's all they knew. They didn't know for sure,
yeah.
But they did know that from the trial and error. The next verse, look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. So it's a dark wine, a deep, dark wine. Of course, it's a big cup. The bigger the cup. And, of course, the darker the wine, the greater the alcohol content. When it giveth the color in the cup. So it's a really dark red. They're trying to make the impression how red this, how big the cup and how red. And did you get that? When it moveth itself aright?
Yes.
That's it, the big, deep, fill up the good stuff. I might be a little tipsy. It took me a little while to catch this. Most people don't catch this. I might be a little tipsy. I'm moving, but my wine will always know which way is up. The wine will always, liquid will always find the horizon. I'm off horizon, but the liquid will always know which way is up. And 32 is pretty simple. At the last, it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Okay, so it's a little dangerous. Okay, even a little deadly. I can handle it. No problem. Next verse. Thy eyes shall behold strange women, and thy heart shall utter perverse things. I put down, hey, good looking, I don't know you, but you called to me. I like the swing on your back porch. Can you think of a better way to get to know somebody? Do you see the little thumbnail? Can you see it?
Yeah.
There's two women there with big flowers in their hair and smoking on cigars. Your eyes will behold strange women.
I think I
dated one of them. Yea, that shall be as thou liest down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. The ruling.
So who hasn't felt feeling when you have had too much to drink and the room is spinning? That's how the top of a mast would be on a sailing ship.
Right. The room spins. Now, if you're an alcoholic you don't have to be an alcoholic to know what I'm talking about. If you've ever gotten drunk and you've laid down, I mean, you're really in your cups and you lay down, the room spins as I lay my head down. I throw my leg to the floor to steady the swerve of the curve. Sometimes it's so violent, I feel like I'm going to be flung out of the crow's nest and right out of the door. The room is spinning, baby. It's spinning. You're probably going to upchuck there in a little bit. There's no way you're going to go to sleep. So the room is spinning. You know, it's like you're out in the ocean now. And the last verse.
This was probably written 1,000 years before Christ.
Oh, no, no. It's the Proverbs. It was probably 2,000, maybe longer.
Wow. Yeah. Still the same old.
Yes, nothing's changed. It's the same. That's why when I read it, you know, and I've read the Bible several times. I believe in AA as a spiritual kindergarten. Everybody's at their own level. But it was like the third time I went through the Bible, and it just it was interesting how this even came up. This verse starts, and I didn't do that. The verse starts, the first two verses on this talks about sex addiction. Talks about prostitution. And then it gets into, it's like pornography and then into alcoholism. So I had a sponsee at one time, and Stephen, and he told me that I took him on as a sponsee, and he said he believed his main addiction was pornography, sex addiction, and that he needed to go to SA or SLA. And I said, well, why don't we do this? I says, you know, he always had a drinking problem. It was always, you know, I says, let's get started and then we'll sort it out. To me, it's always you work the steps. And the next day in my regular Bible reading is when I came across this scripture. The next time in my regular scripture study, this was come up. This was the one. And the question that night was about this guy being a sex addict and an alcoholic. And this starts, the first two verses are about sex addiction, and it goes into alcoholism. I call it a God shot. That's what my sponsor calls it.
Yes.
Isn't that right, Harold?
That's
yeah, and
it.
I've had this happen to me several times before. So I know when these things happen to be aware of them. And this is when I came across it. And I worked with him, and the fella's still sober today. He calls every so often. He's been sober several years now. Still a little nuts, but he's sober and he's working a program. This is the last verse. They have stricken me, shall thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Don't you remember you were a mess? They beat you up. You really don't remember? You're sick, and you don't feel a thing anymore. It's like a nightmare that won't end. No matter what, I can't stop, for I will need to drink once more. So there you go. From the dust, this thing is several thousand years old, and it's as pertinent today as it was back then. Now, whoever wrote this was a womanizer and an alcoholic. It doesn't say who it was. I can't say it was Solomon, but Solomon is accredited with the song. But the wise man was a very wise man, felt talking to his son. So I find that very interesting. Harold?
Yes, I often said in the good old days that I felt like I had been hit by a Mack truck. You know, that's how it felt. And there it is, 4,000 years ago, before Mack trucks, but they got the idea across. I think that's really amazing and really builds my faith. I love that. That's how I measure my recovery every day. Was this an experience that built my faith? And I can safely say today's been a really great day. I wanted to mention also, before we move on, that years ago, I wasn't sure what I thought about God and how it all fit together. So I borrowed my sponsor's faith. He had faith in God. He was willing. So I was willing to go along with his willingness, you know. He believed, and I was able to believe that he believed. It was a beginning, and it served me well. So I recommend that to anyone that's having a difficult time. You can borrow someone's faith. Go ahead. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I'm going to give you the first verses I was talking about. This is the 26th verse. My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eye observe my ways. So he's calling his son to attention. I got something important to tell you. Take a look. And then the next two verses, for a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for a prey and increases the transgressors among men. So you can see here he's talking about prostitutes.
Absolutely.
Women of low, and the way he puts it, a deep ditch and a narrow pit. But see, only someone who has lived, this wasn't sympathetic. This was empathetic. This guy lived it. He lived the life. He was trying to get his son. He was trying to shield his son. He was trying to tell his son his hell. He was trying to protect his son from his hell. Because the chances are we found that alcoholism is a family illness in more ways than one. Generally, we've accepted the fact that there's a genetic propensity that goes over generations. Now, we're not astute enough to know how or why this DNA is compromised. All we know is that some folks just have a natural propensity. If both of their parents were alcoholic or their grandparents were alcoholic, the chances are between social and genetic propensity, they will have the allergy to alcoholism. Of course, the good news is if you never drink, you'll never know. So, you know, but most people will, curiosity will get you in the end. You'll try to see, what is this all about? All my friends are drinking. You know, think of a 12, you know, tonight we had people coming in, a birthday night at primary. And some of them were like, 18, 19 years old, getting a couple 2-year chip and 3-year chip. You go like, whoa, it always blows me away. I guess the older I get, the younger they get. Well, you know, we could do it. Did you want to finish this up, Harold, or do you want to, we have the hour. I'll leave
well,
it up
yes,
to you.
We're at the hour, and I think we've really put together some terrific ideas that can help a lot of people. I hope what we shared tonight was transforming for some of you. These are the things that I've experienced and that Joseph has experienced. Believe me, I've been to a lot of funerals, and some people can learn from other people's mistakes. They observe that, and it gives them the willies. It makes the hair stand up on the back of their neck, and they can steer around some of these problems. Some people can do that. I've been able to do that on occasion. So many times we have to make our own mistakes. So as we see from the Psalms, the Proverbs that Joseph read tonight, the least we can do is take our kids aside and try to point out the pitfalls so that they can, if they can properly get a grasp on that, they can steer around those chuck holes in the road of life and stay out of the ditch. It's interesting that they called it going in the ditch back then, 4,000 years ago. That's really amazing. I'm so tickled that how relevant the Bible is for our age today. I have a new understanding.
That's why they call it the Living Bible. But you got to remember, a lot of the folks in recovery are abject to any type of the Christian ethic, which is okay. It's a spiritual kindergarten. You don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to be a Muslim. You don't have to believe in God. You don't have to do any of that. All we ask you to do is to try our way, not my way of life, not Harold's way of life, not Joseph's way of life. We try our way of life means the group. That means you start off wherever you are. You know, you find them where they're at, you don't have to leave them there. So hopefully as you grow spiritually, these things will be manifest to you on your own with your personal relationship with your God. It's not mine. So we're not pushing religion. We just found these information to be helpful to me or helpful to us. And we're passing that on. You can dismiss it. You can embrace it. It doesn't matter. All we ask you to do is take a look at it. You know, open-mindedness is one of the big keys in long-term recovery. There's a part in the big book that says, nothing will hold a man in utter ignorance and bar from any argument than the concept of contempt prior to investigation. Open-mindedness. Open-mindedness is like a parachute. It only works well under the parachute. It'll only work well when it's open. And the rest of it is principles before personalities. Now, you don't like me. Okay. Some people don't know me and they don't like me. Some people get to know me, then they don't like me. It's none of my business what you think of me. You like that? It's none of my business what you think of me because you think so little of me anyway, if not in stature, surely in time. That means most people aren't thinking about me. Damn. I'm thinking what they might be thinking, and they're not thinking about me. What's up? Most people are so involved with their own place, their own time. The only time somebody's thinking about you, if you make them mad. If you give them a resentment, now you got free rent. Other than that, you don't come to mind. So we help each other the best we can with the tools that we have. We expect you to spiritual kindergarten. You grow a little bit of time. Do we not come from where we stand? You don't have to keep standing in the same place. That's where we're coming from, but we don't have to stay there. So, and ending, I'll tell you, some people will learn from other people's mistakes. I have a hard time learning from my own mistakes. I'll tell people, if you fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me twice, shame on me. If you fool me six more times, it's a charm. So Rum Radio is in 146 foreign countries, including Mississippi. 2,600 towns, cities, and villages. And we just went over 188,000 hits to the website since inception, September 10th, 2009. So 3 years, 3 months, thereabouts. We're averaging about 550 hits a day all over the world. So no money is being made. And on the website, I do my utmost to remain anonymous as to the 11th tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I have a Facebook deal, and my last name is on there. I'm sorry it just happened to work out that way. I do the best I can. I tell people, do you a lot of people say, "Oh, you do promotion." Does a man light a candle and put it under a bushel, or does he put it on a candlestick so all in the room can see? So remember, Rum Radio. It'll help. It's a good resource site, and it has the ability to give you understanding sooner than later. Any last words, Harold?
Well, I just want to encourage everyone, take a look at the ideas on the web page. Go to meetings. Give some thought to finding someone newer than you and passing these ideas along, because there's nothing that will help your recovery than trying to pass along your experience, strength, and hope. This is a life and death struggle. This is a spiritual warfare. We've got to get clear on that. Don't take this casually. Look at all the millions of people that have been helped, and be honest with yourself. Give yourself an opportunity to get into recovery. It begins with being clean and sober, totally abstinent from alcohol and drugs. And that's the beginning. It's not the end, though. We're all in what I call Earth School. So give yourself an opportunity to go to the meetings, listen. You will hear your story told through someone else's lips. That's an amazing experience. And you'll begin to, I began to learn that there is a power greater than myself. At first I realized, well, yeah, alcohol's a power greater than me. It has kicked my butt numerous times. But then we also learned that the spiritual principles are greater than me. The group is a power greater than me. And little by little, step by step, I finally began to learn that there is a God and I'm not it. So that's what recovery is about. Give yourself a chance to come over to the winning side in this war. After you've fought and fought and fought and you've tried every which way to drink like other people, when you come to the realization that you cannot drink like other people, you can't continue to drink and you can't seem to stop, when you come to that jumping off place, the 12 steps and the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are a good place to go. We will love you until you learn to love yourself. So God bless everyone, and I hope this helps your recovery. I know it helped mine. It was nice being on the radio with you tonight, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. You're always a benefit. And Harold's also my sponsor, so this way I stay in touch with my sponsor, and I have a co-host. So we knock off two drunks with one stoned.
There you go.
Anyway, well, thank you, everybody. I hope you got something out of this. Tell your friends. Tell your other people in your groups that this, and take a look at it yourself. Use the tools laid at your feet. Open your mouth and pass it on. Remember, we'll see you on the radio from radio.org. Good night.
Good night.